League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to Dion's Gaffer Tapes with me, Dion Dublin, the podcast series that isn't afraid to sling a cup of tea across a dressing room in order to get the real story. Every week, we welcome a different guest into the studio, and this week, I'm very pleased to be welcoming a no-nonsense manager, a no-nonsense centre-half, and a no-nonsense bloke in real life, Mick McCarthy. Mick, how are you, mate? You looking well?
I'm great, thanks, Dion. Yes, I'm trying to keep the best side out, doing my bit in the gym, and, you know, keeping right anyway. So it's lovely to see you, mate. It's lovely to see you.
And you, mate. I've got to go back to when you and I had a bit of fun.
Yes.
Back in 2000. Can you remember?
Strangely enough, despite the amount of drink I had that evening, yes, I can.
We were doing Euro 2000, weren't we?
We were, yes, over in Amsterdam. It was great fun. I have to be honest, I loved it. I mean, I've always enjoyed doing that, the core comms and a bit of punditry. But it was made extra special that we had good crack. There were some good characters there. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? We kind of went on air, didn't we? That sort of like half 10, 11 o'clock at night, yeah. When we got off air about half one. And we managed to find the only bar that would stay open for us.
Yes, well, I do remember that night well, actually, because I set off walking. I said, listen, I'm going, I'm out of here because I've got to go. I must have been doing something in the morning. And I set off walking back to the hotel, couldn't find it. And a guy stopped and asked me, I was on a bridge. And then a lady stopped on a scooter and said, can we help you? I said, well, look, I'm looking for my hotel. Any idea what it's called? No. I said, I can tell you, it's on a canal and it's near a church. And the boy said, so is every other hotel in Amsterdam. Anyway, they took me back. I was well looked after. I was up playing tennis in the morning as well, as I remember. So.
See, I can't believe that, to be fair, because I've got to let the people know that are listening. I remember that night vividly because I remember we were leaving the bar. And me and you were just waiting for everybody to come out, you know, staff and some of the girls that were doing the auto queue and all that stuff in the studio. And I do remember vividly that you started playing a wheelie bin like a drum.
I was good as well, wasn't I? I was doing me Cozy Powell into impression. we got moved on fairly quickly, I think. Anyway, we'll...
Oh, yeah, we did. It was great, mate. I've got to say, mate, I look back on that and I think to myself, that was a trip I will never forget.
No.
And to be fair, and I kept up with you when it comes to... I kept up with you on the drinking stakes as well. I was delighted.
Dion, please, you're giving me a bad name. I left you in the bar, mate. You were trying to get me on vodka and Red Bulls, and I know I like a bottle of beer, and I'm cool with that. But once you started with the falling down water, I said, no, I'm off. I'm gone.
That'll do me. Listen, mate, tell us, just want to find out a bit more about yourself. Yeah. And was there a moment when you were playing, when you actually, during your playing career, was there a moment that you thought, right, okay, I think management could be for me, or coaching? Or
Yes, there was a defining moment, because up until playing for Manchester City, then when I went to Celtic, I was still, I was in my prime, and I wasn't really considering the fact that I might want to coach. You know, I was enjoying playing. And then I went across to Lyon, and I went across, started playing. I had 10 games, I had a knee injury, and I needed it operating on, or at least the thought I did. I ended up not having it operated on, but I had to rehabilitate, because I'd had an operation at Celtic before leaving. And I was in France at the time, and Remy Gard and Bruno Engotti got in the team instead of me. Well, I might be a lot of things, but I'm not stupid. I wasn't getting back in that team. Not a chance. And I wanted to play in the World Cup because it was 1990, and so I came back to Millwall. But that sort of galvanised my thoughts as well, that had I stayed in France and not been able to do my coaching badges, I may well then have been forgotten. Come back later on, it would have been harder. So it turned out to be I didn't want to leave Lyon. I loved it there. Mm. And my wife loved it as well. She loved living there with the kids. But it was important for my career. And it ended up being a good move because I came back to Millwall. I played in the World Cup. And of course, then I got the player manager's job at Millwall. And, well, 900 and odd games later, I'm still doing it.
Which is crazy, really is. Are there players that you remember thinking to yourself, I'm so glad I played with him. How lucky was I to play with him? That stick in your mind?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, one that always sticks out in my mind is Paul McStay at Celtic. He was amazing. He really was. Wow. Yeah, amazing. Liam Brady for Ireland, of course. Paul McGrath. I mean, he made my job so easy, Paul McGrath. He used to say to me, Mick, just keep talking to me. I said, don't you worry. Well, mate, I've got you in front of me. I had a cigar on behind him. It was easy. So he was amazing. Kevin Sheedy for Ireland was amazing.
Yes.
You know, and then, you know, players I've played with, but, you know, Robbie Keane, who played for me, and Damien Duff in the Ireland team. Yeah, I've been fortunate to have some good players to play for me, but some really good players I played with. You know, and then the ones I played alongside, Kevin Moran as well. We had a great partnership in the Ireland team. I love playing with him. Mark Lawrenson. And I was a bit embarrassing that because I told him he was one of my heroes. I thought he was wonderful, and then I got to play with him.
How did you manage that, Mick? Because it's hard, isn't it, playing with people that you hold in high regard?
Yes, it is, and it's even harder still when he makes you look so inadequate when you're alongside him. I remember playing with Taff, Ian Evans, who helped me throughout my career. He helped me as a young player when he came to Barnsley. And he, you know, he used to laugh. I was like the mad dog he had on the leash. He used to send me into head everything and kick everything, and he'd tidy up behind me. But without his influence very early on in my career as a player and then as a coach and a manager, I probably wouldn't be here speaking to you, having all the jobs I've had and still being a coach.
Management-wise, while you were playing, were there managers and coaches that said things to you and you'd stored and you'd used all for your career?
Yes, and both ways on that, Dion. I've had things that I've used, and I've had lots of things that I would never have used.
I don't want to know who they came from. You can leave
that. No, I wouldn't. You know what, though? Times have changed, and you have to, you know, you have to evolve with the game and with the players and how they are. And it's certainly a different game now to it was in my first Millwall game as a manager coach against Port Vale back in 1992. Football's changed, players have changed, attitudes have changed, the game has. And I'd like to think, well, no, I have. I've moved on with it and I've evolved with it. You know, the tearing strips off people in the dressing room don't really go down too well. You know, I think you've got to have a bit more. It does happen occasionally.
I can imagine.
Honestly, about five or six times throughout my career when I've really gone into one. And then things managers have said. Alex Ferguson was right on the blower straight away when I got the job at Millwall. You know, wishing me well, sending me a message. That meant a lot to me at the time. And he still does that. He's to younger managers who get jobs. Big Jack Charlton. I loved how he influenced me a great deal, God rest him. Alan Clark, when he came to Barnsley, made us more professional. There was none of that washing your own kit. There was none of that coming in just at 1:30 on a Saturday. We had a pre-match meal. We had a club suit. He introduced me into that kind of stuff. This is way back, you know, I was 21, so 40 years ago. Norman Hunter then, I loved the bones of him, Norman. God rest him as well.
You're throwing so many names in there, Mick. It's amazing, mate, because you've played with so many and you were managed and coached by so many big names. I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, I've spoken to a few managers now, Mick, and majority of them have said the same thing, that I had a word with Sir Alex and he helped me here and he said this. And
he did. And I've remained very good friends with him. You know, I was up at Macclesfield when Mark Kennedy was there. I went to watch Mark's team and just, you know, see him and give him a bit of a dig out. And Sir Alex was there. He's at the game. So there's me And then there's Sir Alex at this game watching Macclesfield versus Plymouth. And you know, that just tells me how much he loves the game. And I've dropped a few names there. I'm sorry, you'll have to pick all these names up.
No, it's fine. I've got them all here at my feet.
But I've been so fortunate. You know, I mean, as a centre-back to be playing with Norman Hunter, who was one of my heroes and still remains so. That was such a help in my career. Big Jack, I was just saying about that was his management. I was in 1990, I was the captain of the team in Italy, Italia 90, and I had to go to all the press conferences. And I loved how he dealt with them. He was so brutally honest, whether it was about our performance or about the other team's performance. Never really complained, you know. I say never complained, unless it was justified. It wasn't a whinger. Yeah, it's a really bad decision. Everybody can see. He'd have a whinger about it, which we all do. But he wasn't a moan and a complain. And I loved him for that. And I loved his simplicity. Mm. And his simplicity was as much. We play England in 88, and he said to me and the lads, Peter Beardsley gets the ball, run at him. Just make him get his head down, make him change direction. Because if he doesn't and he starts weaving, we're dead. And to the letter of the law, I mean, listen, Gary Lineker had a whole host of chances in that game, but with a good keeper. And we ended up winning it, but we did nullify a big part of that through a simple, tiny little bit of detail that he might have had it on the back of a fag packet, Jack. And I loved his simplicity. And I tell you what, he was so bright and so intelligent. Yeah, look, I love the bones of him. Really sad loss.
Probably didn't get the recognition and respect that he deserved away from the game. I would imagine people in the game did give him that respect.
No, he didn't, because he didn't play the beautiful game. He won football matches. Mm. You know, and
found a way, didn't he?
And I'm not going to put him in the same category, but I see it now with Neil Warnock. How many promotions has Warnie had? You know, I played with Warnie at Barnsley, so I dropped another big name in. And then he'd come from Aldershot or somewhere, Warnie, and he was great, and I'm still good mates with him. You know, Tony Pulis, Big Sam. I get lumped in, you know, we all get lumped in together because we're not the purists.
Into that category, yeah.
We're not the purists. We've had success, all different sorts, but I would say I said that Chris Hughton had gone into Nottingham Forest and he'd been pragmatic, and I instantly, when I'm getting in the car afterwards, I get a message from Pulis, from Tony. He said, Mick, use purposeful. He says, because pragmatic sort of means that you're boring and you're not. And I had to say to, was it Gary Weaver I was doing it with? And I had to say, he said, oh, but Chris Hughton played such lovely football at Brighton. I said, he did. I said, but the pragmatism is attention to detail, not getting beaten from free kicks and corners, having free kicks and corners that you score from, having a solid system, being really defensive, solid, and winning games. That is what I see, you know. Mm. I was almost having to apologise for using the word, and then Pulis, my mate Pulis, he texts me. He says, so we're purposeful managers. I'm using that one now.
I love that you've got that kind of relationship with the names that you're throwing in there, because they were all probably on your same wavelength at the same time, managed at the same time, same kind of category of manager, no nonsense, how can we win a game?
Yeah, and I love being in that category. I don't apologise for that at all. You know, the fact when we won the league at Sunderland and romped away, were we playing lumpet football? No. We got all these young players in. We won with a canter in the end. Never seems like it when you're doing it, but when you end up about 8 points clear. And at Wolves, you know, we had 2 7-game winning streaks. You know, 21 points on the bounce twice with Michael Kiteley and Jarvis and Sylvain Ebanks-Blake.
So many good players. So many good players.
And, you know, big Chris Iwelumo playing in the team. And is it Iwelumo or Iwelumo? I'm never quite sure now. I just call him...
Listen, nobody knows apart from Chris.
I call him Looms anyway, so that's...
that's a safe way.
You know what I'm saying? We go to the World Cup in Ireland and there's this pragmatic, purposeful manager who loses on penalties to Spain, and we should have beaten them. We played them off the park second half. So, you know, it irks me. You can probably tell it irks me slightly.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
For all of us. For me, for Tom, for Big Sam, you know, Moisey at times. Dave gets into that category. Warnie. He's top of the top of the championship, isn't he? Why again?
Exactly. He does it all the time though. And those managers that you mentioned, Mick, have had to change as well because they're still involved in the game.
Yes.
And when you all started, it was a very, very different game with
absolutely.
What I'm trying to get to is kids cleaning boots and kids doing jobs. Yeah. And do you think that's missed in the game?
I sound like an old curmudgeon when I say yes.
But I agree with you.
I do think that is missed in the game. I don't think apprentice footballers should be used as skivvies and staff to do it, but I don't think it does them any harm. I don't think it does them any harm at all. And it's not abusing them. I think you get to have a relationship with the top pros that you're cleaning their boots. I mean, the amount of lads will say to me, you know, Andy Inchcliffe, I'm working with him on Sky, he says, used to clean my boots. Paul Lake used to clean my boots. There's a few, you know, and because I was one of the big players at Manchester City at the time when I signed and we got promoted, and they remember it, you know, and it's important that I always thought it was great. I mean, I'm cleaning Brian Joyce's boots and. Well, I had a clean Warnock's boots and all, which irks me because he reminds everybody all the time. But, I was at Barnsley in the fourth division, but I love that relationship that I had with the first team players as a 16-year-old. It was great.
It's that, what do you call it, Mick, as well? It's that I want to be where they are. So how can I get myself to that position? You know, I've got to clean boots and I've got to do jobs and... In my experience, it's sweeping the stands and painting the dressing rooms and all that stuff I did at Cambridge United, and I think, well, I'm glad I did it.
Yes, we were divoting the pitch on a Monday morning, putting the divots back, and we could hear the first team on the training ground training, and we used to hate it, but we had such fun doing it. And Norman Rimmington, who is one of my all-time heroes, Rimmo. Who was he'd been the physio, the first team coach. He was the groundsman. He'd played in goals for Barnsley. I could have listened to his stories while I was divoting every single day. Honestly, he's one of the reasons that I had a career in football. He was such a powerful influence on me as a 16-year-old. And I credit to him, you know, to this day, Norman Rimmington, Rimmo, and... we'd sit and have a cup of tea. We'd divvied the pitch, then we have to go out and do the stands or whatever. And we'd sit and have our lunch with him. Lunch. a sandwich and a cup of tea. And we'd just listen to him talking about football. And it was great and I wouldn't change it, not at all.
During your managerial career, does it change, Mick, from whatever club you're at managing? Because you've managed a lot of clubs. Does the pressure change at whichever club you're at?
Yes, of course.
Or is it the same?
I think you put the same pressure on yourself. It doesn't matter where you are. So I can't say that when I did Millwall, I felt it's that first game. You know, you turn out, you have your first game, you want to win it. It doesn't matter where you are. But I was at Millwall and then I go to Ireland and I didn't win a game. My eighth game it was when I won it. And then I leave. And by the way, I end up going to the last 16 of the World Cup. I just miss out on it. And then I go to Sunderland. 11 games on the bounce. I lost. We had 9 games to go. And
how did you keep your job, Mick? How did you keep your job? Because some managers nowadays would have been sacked, wouldn't they?
Well, I joined into the bottom of the league.
I think
we got 19 points with 9 games to play. So quite clearly, playing for a draw wasn't going to happen. So I thought, well, we'll try and win them all. Guess what? We lost them all. And then the championship starts and we go to Nottingham Forest and I think we get done 1-0 there. Then we're at home to Millwall and we get done 1-0. So I've done 11 games. We go to Preston and there's a non-league team there who were there hoping that we won because they didn't want to lose the record for the most consecutive defeats. Seriously. So I go through the boardroom, and just close to the boardroom to get to the press room after the game, and they're all patting me on the back. And I said, you can keep it. I said, that's not a record. We beat them 2-0.
There you go.
So we win 2-0. We end up in the semi-final of the Cup and the playoffs that year. And then we won the championship the following year. Getting relegated out of the Premier League, mate, and then... I have a list of players that I have in my bag, like, you know, from Kevin Phillips and Mickey Gray and all these, and then Lillian Lassons, all his, all, there was about 13 players, 14, 15 players that had to go. And then I started signing likes of Andy Wells from Stockport for 15 grand, Neil Collins from Dundee, 30 grand, Dean Whitehead, Liam Lawrence. We got all these guys in, and Jeff Whitley on a free from Man City.
Yes, you know, yes,
and,
Jeff,
and all
yeah.
these lads, we get them in. And what I'm saying about all these purposeful managers I'm talking about is they all create an environment that teams want to play in and become, you know, they get the gel together and they want to play and they become a team that are hard to play against. You know, that's what we do. And is it any more pressure anywhere else? It's only because the bigger the club, it seems to be, there's more fans. Not at the minute, of course. There's more fans. That puts pressure on you, the size of the club. But, you know, Dion, I would imagine every time you step in front of a camera, you put yourself under pressure to be as good as you possibly can be and never to let yourself down.
And always mention that the stairs lead to the bedrooms. That's what I've got to say all the time.
Right, and I tell you what, the lead to the door and all, mate, if you're not very good at it, that's always the mental.
Get yourself out if it's not working.
Oh, there's a front and a back door that you can shove it out of.
Tell me about the trust between, I've never been a manager or a coach, so I don't know. So what about that relationship between players and a manager? And the other question within that, Mick, is do you have a list of players that you think, right, if I'm a manager, I'd like to bring those players in because I trust them?
Yes, I do. Yes, I would. And yes, not even on the list, some players that I've seen that I think, okay. Yes, you know, and there is that real element of trust. But going back to your original question about, you know, how do you get that trust? And people talk about motivation. I do believe it's on a daily basis. And I believe that my consistency and my personality is a big factor in that. That if we've lost on Saturday, I'm still in on Monday morning. And Taff, Ian Evans, he used to say to me, I first got the job, Mickey said, it's a silly hat, red nose, juggling routine this morning. Let's get them going, you know. And it stuck with me forever, that. And that you don't go in with a big sad face and a growling after Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then expect to come in Thursday when you've come round and all the players go, you know. I remember that happening to me, and I used to think, wow, he's not spoke civilly to me for 3 days because we lost. And then on Thursday he comes in, hey, we're all getting lost.
Change.
You know. And then
it's hard to get him on board, isn't it?
Hard to get him on board. And I think I've a bit of a mantra to it now that footballers are people. The people first and the footballers second. And the people...
That's a good way.
Their families come before the football. And if, you know, some diehard fans hate me saying that you know, the club becomes... It does not. And let me tell you, great clubs don't make great football teams. Managers and coaches and players... Great clubs will always be there. There's some great clubs down in the first division. Yeah. But they're not great teams. And it's players and coaches and managers... And I'll say the fans as well, because, you know, that's all in the mix, they get them together. It makes me laugh at times. Oh, this is a great club. Yeah, it is. Not a very good team, is it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well. There's a differentiation there, isn't there? You know, people think you're talking about the club. You're not.
No.
If you're a great club, you're a great club, aren't you?
Yes.
You always will
always
be.
Will always be. Will be. Got all this history. But what you want is a great team to represent that club. Mm. And it's the players that will do that. And you have to get the best out of them. And no matter what it is, and there'll be some who thinks some of the players are hopeless. I'll be looking at them thinking, what is he good at? And I say to the players now, I'll give you the best piece of advice. It was given to me in a different format, but I give it to them is, if you do what you're good at well, every time you step onto that pitch, I'm likely to pick you and you're going to be a good player and we'll all be a good team. That piece of advice was given to me by no less than Alan Clark when I was about 20. You head it, you kick it, you take it off the opposition and then you give it to some of our team who can play. So,
What's he saying about you, Mick? That's bang out of
order. I can just say, for about 2 years, I really resented that information. And then when I was 23, I realised it was the best piece of information I'd ever been given. But it was just delivered. It was delivered in the wrong way.
in the wrong way. Mick, what is it about? And I know so many managers and players all over the world. Yeah. That always say, oh, what a character Mick is, what a character Mick is. And so many people try to copy your traits. Don Goodman, for instance.
Really? Oh,
honestly, mate, you won't know this because people ain't going to say it to your face. People always mention you. I know a lot of Irish players that have been under your jurisdiction, yeah, under your umbrella. Oh, very great. Just straight with you. What is it about that character? Is it just you? Or is it a management character?
No, it's me. I don't change. No, it's funny. I was talking to Andy Welshy, right out of the blank. I got a text message the other day. Andy Welsh. I texted him. I said, "Is that Andy Welsh who got promoted from Sunderland?" He comes back. Yes. Yeah, so I'm on the phone for him then for 45 minutes, and he just said to me, "He said the environment that you created at Sunderland by being honest with us and straight with us, everybody appreciates it. You know." And I'm not, it's not play acting. I bring them all in. I tell them, look, if you're not playing, you're not playing. Sometimes you're not playing because there we are. Chris Iwiluma. I told him he wasn't playing one day because I wanted to play Andy Keogh, and he said, "Gaffer, I'm leading scorer and I've done this." I said, "I know, yeah, and I want to play him." I said, he trains well every day. He helps training. He makes training good. If I don't play him now, when will I play him? Will he never get a game?" So he said, "Well, you know, what's the reason?" I said, "Because I want to play him." You've done nothing wrong, yeah, but he's playing. And of course, Loom said, he said, I hated that for a while. He said, then Keogh comes in and scores and we win the game. And he can see the merit in it. But what he could see the merit in is that I actually told him the reason why. I didn't say, "Oh, you didn't play too well the other day," or "Oh, you look like you're limping. Are you got a bit of a limp?" You know, which we all know managers have done that in the past. Rather than just saying,
it's just a choice.
Just saying, "I'm playing him today," you know, and give him the reason.
Well, you know, if you're the manager and you've got it, and you're the type of the manager, that's your prerogative, isn't it?
Well,
do you manage different players in different ways, Mick? Do you manage different characters in different ways, or does everybody get the same Mick McCarthy?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. I think they do. I was going to think about it for a minute, see if I did. No, they do, Dion. I don't see that. Come on, they're all different characters, and you can't, you know, there is a certain one way of Mick McCarthy. But I'd be the first one to go put my hand on and show them real empathy for anything they would have, and I always say the door's open, come in and talk to me. You might not hear what you want to hear, but at least come in and have the conversation. But I go back to that. I treat them as people. You know, that's...
You couldn't have had many knocks on the door, Mick. Surely players... I can't see many players knocking on your door saying, "Gaff, I want a word."
Oh, yeah. If the player that's hearing this, and I know another manager, and I'm not going to name names to protect the innocent, but one of them told me that the reason he didn't understand me was because I was talking Japanese and he didn't understand Japanese. And that did evolve into a really good row in my office. Yeah, but I'm glad it didn't kick off because he might have given me a clump, to be honest. But anyway, I was getting on.
So have you had difficult characters in the dressing rooms, Mick, to deal with that you've had to say, right, it's not working, it's not working?
Oh, have I ever? Yeah, of course I have. I mean, without touching on the one thing everybody knows about, yes, of course I've had difficult situations to deal with. And I think you've got to deal with them. I think because I deal with it one way, you know, I don't deal with one way and one the other way. You know, if there's... And I hate them fines and I hate punishing them, but if the rules are there, that's what the rules are there for.
So you've been on umpteen pre-season tours,
yeah,
with teams and as a player. Yeah. Which one stick with you and why? Because I know there's a few stories there.
Oh yeah, one of them stick with me forever because we were in Dublin and I'm the manager. I'm the manager at Ipswich, and I said names. I'm not going to name names because it will. But I said, the lads would always, I said, right, you're in it. You can. We'd have a week's training, play a game, Saturday night, you're off and running. You're out, right? So we play at 3 o'clock. So to give them a good time, you're in at 1 o'clock. And I'd always say 1 o'clock. So I'm giving myself a bit of grace because I knew they'd be on the phone to me. They'd all be there. So, one Mick McCarthy, there's a gaffer. Can we have another hour? Super Mick, the super, you know. And I could hear them all in the background. And Luke Chambers would have rang me, gaffer, any chance of another hour? I said, right, another hour. But I'm telling you, anybody 1 minute over, it's a week's wages. That was the fine, you know. Come on, 2 o'clock in the morning. So anyway, one of the lads, and a wonderful lad, and if he ever wants to tell the story publicly, he can. But he came up the lift with a kebab in his hand at 1:01. And that cost him a week's salary. Let me tell you, that kebab cost him double figures anyway.
So, that was an expensive kebab, oh, eh?
And when he walked in, he went, I said, yes, sorry, mate. You know, if it had been a plane, you've missed it. You're gone. So don't. And he knew. Anyway, I did the honourable thing on the Monday morning when we got back. I called him and I did a deal with him. I told him I'd split it 50% if he paid it into the kitty for the lads to take him out. You know, the usual
oh,
stuff.
Brilliant.
So it wasn't taken by the club. You know, when the club takes it.
Correct.
I said, I'll split it in
correct.
Half with you. You give it to the lads' fund, and you've got to take them out for dinner. So
to the players' pool.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant, man. Yeah. That is brilliant. So it's a good way of dealing with it without you've stuck to what you've said.
Yeah.
But you've kind of enhanced the atmosphere and the morale.
Yeah. Well, you know, you try to. You certainly don't go around bashing the players because that's no good at all. And that's when they've played. There's a time and place, I think, to have a growl at them. But reality is, I think you're more often trying to keep them going, keep them bubbling, keep them interested, absolutely. Keep them motivated. And that motivate, people said to me, will you give them a lash before the game? No! You motivate them by treating them right and then making sure the sessions are good. You know, TC's with me, he's brilliant, he's a brilliant coach. So the sessions are always positive, short and sharp. They enjoy them. I think we work them hard, but then we give them plenty of rest as well.
Advice to Mick McCarthy, an 18-year-old Mick McCarthy. What advice would you give him?
Get rid of the tash.
Are you talking to me or talking to yourself? I had a dodgy one as well.
Did you see my tash? It was like a scrubby brush under my lip. I mean, it was. Talk about, I had about 4 days growth and I played this big tash. I must have been that intimidating looking. Advice, footballing advice.
Yeah, as a player, as a person, you know.
I look back on it and I wish I could have enjoyed it more. When I was 18, don't get me wrong, I was enjoying it. But I thought I was angry at everybody. I was, not everybody, I loved being a footballer, but I took it so seriously. And, you know, I just wonder sometimes. I pretty much hated everybody I played against. That's what it was like. You know, there was none of this. Well, there was none of this WhatsApp and Facebook and keeping in touch with players. I knew none of that. And I've seen a whole different side to it the older I've got. You know, and I've mellowed a bit. Of course, I have. So yeah, I would say I wish I could have enjoyed it more. I enjoyed the football, but I'm telling you, I was so engrossed in, so serious about it. I think some of it passed me by for a long time.
And I suppose a lot of that is part of that is standards as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Standards for yourself as well, you know. Yeah, aggression, yeah, of course, but keeping your standards up takes concentration, Mick.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I always thought that I had this. It wasn't arrogance; it was just how I thought life would happen to me. I thought I'll be an apprentice footballer, then I'll sign pro. Then I'll play in the first team and then I'll go on to another club, a bigger club than Barnsley. How the hell, knowing what I know now, I thought that. How stupid or naive I was.
Yeah, but were you, Mick? But were you, though? Because that's what happened. Did your mindset allow you to get to where you wanted to be? Because you were thinking of it. You were thinking of it and you believed it.
Probably. I mean, I had to go down. I was playing for Barnsley Boys Club at 16. I was waiting to go down the pit. story's been told a lot. And Keith Steele, who ran the team, his father, Johnny Steele, was the secretary, he'd play, and he'd been the manager at Barnsley. He said, they want to sign as an apprentice. Go down and down to Oakwell, knock on the door, at the secretary's door. Mick McCarthy apparently wants to sign me. Can you believe this now as a 6-year-old? He said, well, I know nothing about it. I'll go and find out. So I'm stood there like a right lemon. And eventually, 15 minutes later, it seemed like an age. Yeah, come on in. Give me this form. I don't know, £6 for my mother and £4 for me. And that was it. And I signed for 2 years. And from that humble beginning, I actually thought, but, you know, I was playing in the intermediate team. I was the captain of the intermediate team at 16. I just thought it was going to happen. But I'm saying now, as a manager, the amount of young players I've had to disappoint at 18 to tell them that they can't be a pro footballer or not in our team. Oh, I was completely in la-la land, believe me.
That's got to be one of the hardest things as a manager, again, from the outside looking in, of your bubble, that you say to players, I'm sorry, mate, you're not quite good enough.
I hate it. That was proper doomsday for them as well. And what is worse is the young lads would be, you know, I don't know how you structure it to do that. They'd all be sat waiting, you'd be calling them in. How do you do it? You call one in and tell him he's signed, he's in the cock-a-hoop. Then you tell him, well, you can't do that. So I sort of ended up telling all the ones that weren't staying together. But then, of course, one of them would cry. And then, that's devastating for him, for me. If there's 10 people you're going to tell, you can't tell it over 10 days. That would be purgatory for them as well. Mm. You have the parents in, they're really upset. I've been at the club, we've been bringing him here since he was 8 or 6. I said, I know, and every year somebody gets released, and you know, it's just your turn. I have to say, over the years, we've got it wrong a few times, but, not too often.
Tell us who you've got it wrong with, Mick, because I know there's players who obviously have gone on and done okay, but you had no space for them.
I guess at Ipswich, Jack Marriott was the one who, and I have to say, and I said it to him actually, when he went off, was he at Crawley, and then he went to Luton, and then he was Peterborough, and we played him in a pre-season friendly. And Jack, I remember in pre-season, he was getting lapped. He was, too much weight on.
Big lad.
Didn't want to run. And I saw him at Peterborough and I said, he'd been scoring goals and he got his career on track and he looked the part. And I said to the lads, we'll have to score 2 goals today because Jack will score. He'll score again. And he goes, 1-0 down, Jack Marriott. So I said to him after the game, Jack, I'm really thrilled, fam, delighted you're doing well. I said, but where's your twin, that little fat fella that used to play at our place? And he said, and he's there now with his cheekbones. And he said, Gaff, I know, fair play to him. He took it. And he's had a fabulous career, and I'm delighted for him. And he's obviously done that himself. He could always score goals, but, he's had a great career. And so that's one of them.
Yeah, it's always going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah. I like to be proved wrong, though, Dion. I love to be proved wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of managers will accept that for the good of the player,
absolutely,
of course.
Yeah.
So, Mick, tell me, you're known as a no-nonsense centre-half who takes no prisoners. Have you ever had to manage players that are pretty much the same as you or played like you in that manner?
Yeah, yes, I have. And of course, I don't look for players. I look for players who are committed and are aggressive, especially for centre-halves or defenders. It's great if they can play a bit of football as well. But I don't like to compare them with me. I'm dissing myself there. I captained an Ireland team in the quarterfinal of the World Cup in Italy. So
exactly.
Maybe I could pass the ball to somebody. I don't know. And I always feel anyway, defenders. We always had that pride in keep it out of your net. If you keep it out of your net, you don't get beat.
Yeah.
And then you can rely on the little heroes like Ray Houghton, who sticks up and scores the goals, and John Aldridge or Quinner. So I took a lot of pride in keeping it out of my net. So, yeah, I've had lads, and I love the lads like that, that when you see them in training, even in a five-a-side, they'll get hit in the face, they'll get hit between the legs, they'll stop it going in the net. And I really appreciate those type.
Absolutely. I played with one. I played with Liam Daish at Coventry.
Well, I had Daish in the Irish team.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, exactly. So he's one I was, you know, talking about.
I'll have to tell you that story because he gets sent off in a game in America. We're playing against Mexico. So he gets sent off. So Quinny then gets sent off for remonstrating as well. So that, and I get hold of the ball because the team we're playing Bolivia. So I can't remember. Yeah, it's a South American team. Yeah. We've got a Mexican referee, Raul Dominguez, who was refereeing. So I get the ball and I boot it into the stand. So he sends me off. This is after all.
No.
So the two lads have gone in and I have to walk in after them. Anyway, as I'm walking into... This is like 5 minutes after they've gone. I'm still arguing all this stuff. And I have to walk all the way around the pitch and into the dressing room. As I'm walking, I thought, I can't let this moment pass, you know. So I went in and I booted the door open, slammed it open. I said, where are you two? You've let me down. You've let your families down. And the two lads come out of the shower. Go, Gaffer, no, sorry. I said, don't worry, lads. I've been sent off as well. So they break the next laughing. Oh dear. I couldn't miss the opportunity.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
Oh dear.
They thought I'd just come in to have it with them.
Well, yeah, under any other circumstances, possibly.
Possibly.
So then during your playing career, Mick, did you have players that you thought, oh no, you're playing centre half, you walk out over the white line, and you think, I mean, for a difficult game today. Were there certain players that got the better of you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, but, you know, at the time I walked out, it was always, right, who are you picking up at the corners? You pick the big centre forward up the big centre half, you know. So Bobby Campbell playing at Huddersfield when I was just a kid coming into the game. Tony Cunningham, who I played against at Lincoln, against him and Mick Harford.
Oh, wow.
Me and Norman, myself and Norman Hunter at centre-back, and Alan Clark, the manager, said, you don't have to worry about these two. They battered seven bells out. And then we played them on the Tuesday night. It was the League Cup games. And
yeah.
I have to say, I sought retribution on Tuesday night, and we beat them comfortably. So I run it, and Mick Harford's brilliant. I see him now. And Tony, I had a message from Tony Cunningham recently. Norman Whiteside. I wanted the pitch too often with Norman because he was generally playing in a higher league than me. But when I did, we had a game that I landed in the penalty area and Norman walked from my shins all the way up my back and stood on me. And it's only when I looked up, it's Norman. And I'm telling you, after about 60 minutes, the ball bounced between us and both of us went like that. Oh, what the hell is that? We'd been kicking and punching and he was brilliant. And and that night, I'm in the is it yesterday's in Old Edge. Yeah. And he's in there with his dad and he's there, Mick, come on, let's have a pint. You know, that I love that about that era.
Yes.
Seriously, kicked seven bells out of each other. It was a great game, and then enjoyed a pint afterwards.
Very honest era, Mick, that, isn't it, from then onwards? Very honest players and, you know...
Yeah, there were. But, you know, it was... You knew what you were getting, and they knew. I mean, you know, TC, Terry, and he sends his best, by the way, Terry.
Oh, Connett, good man. Back at him as well, pal.
He said... When they ask about me and him, he said, oh, I played against the gaffer. And, you know, first one was free. He said, you know, he used to kick me and I'd try and stay away from him. So he tells the other side of the story.
Of course,
the story,
other side of the corn. Okay, mate, listen, I'm not going to keep you. You've spent a bit of time with us now. My last question, and it's always my last question, and I'm going to call it Dion's Diner. You're coming into Dion's Diner.
Yeah.
And you're allowed four... managers of your choice, alive or dead, to join you at your table. Who would you invite?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought when you give questions like this, they normally ask them beforehand so you can think about it. Jack Charlton.
Yeah, for what reason?
Well, for his knowledge of the game, for the fact he's a World Cup winner, the fact he's one of my heroes, I supported Leeds as a kid, but for his stories, his... I said the knowledge on the game, that was great. He knew all about that. His forthrightness, it wouldn't matter who he was with, he'd be giving it to him. I'd have Alex Ferguson. Similar reasons, but I mean the success he's had, all the titles he's had.
He's just the gaffer, isn't he, Mick? He's just the gaffer. Everybody calls him the gaffer.
Yeah. I'm all right. I'll tell you the story of Alex if you don't mind, because when we played against him, I always got beat by Alex. Most people did.
Yeah.
And he'd be sat in his office. He'd say, "Mick, come on in. Have a glass of red." Unlucky after the game. So every time, unlucky. I actually thought the red wine we were drinking was unlucky. I thought it was the name of it every time I went in. And then we played them at home. And it was a televised game and we beat them 2-1 at Wolves. So I got to do my press conference. I come back down. When I come into my office, he's sat in the chair, bottle of red open. He says, "Mate, come on in. Have a glass of red. You lucky." I said to him, I said, "Alex, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, calling me a lucky." Yeah. So I'd have Alex, and I've got two more to have.
Yes, you have, mate.
I have. Do you know what? I think I'd take Franz Beckenbauer. I know he's, for whatever reason, he was one of my heroes. I used to try and bend it with my right foot. And he played for Germany, managed Germany. He's won the World Cup at both, didn't he?
Yes, he did. No, he did.
You know, so him. And I think of the current ones, of all of them now, I don't know how much fun it would be having a few. They'd all have a few beers as well, these lads, generally,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But
definitely.
I think I might have to have... Bielsa at Leeds has just astonished me at what he's done there.
What a side.
I watched him the other night. They've just the vibrancy in that team, the running, the passing.
Energy.
Yeah. So I didn't hear myself saying that. You know, I think I'd have to find out what he does. I think I'd have to pick his brains. The trouble is, he'd have to bring somebody else with him to interpret
it.
Yeah, and I might have to bring somebody else with me so the others can understand me. I don't know. I'll take those four.
Top man.
And Franz Beckenbauer was one of my all-time heroes. I absolutely loved him as a player.
Yeah, he wasn't bad though, was he?
And you know what? I met him and I wasn't disappointed. He was great, which is always nice.
Always nice. Listen, mate, it's always nice to have a chat with you and a catch-up, by the way.
Love it.
It's been a while.
It has, It's been a while. Let's try and see if we can play the drums on a wheelie bin sometime soon, shall we?
Listen, I'd like that, mate, because that means we'd be pissed. So that's fantastic. Listen, mate, whatever's next for you, Mick, I wish you all the best and I hope it works out, mate. Thank you so much.
Cheers, mate. Lots of love to you.
Cheers, kiddo. Okay, then, that's enough about drumming on wheelie bins. Thanks very much, Mick. I really appreciate your time. That's it for this episode of Dion's Gaffer Tapes. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me on my socials. And if you've liked what you've heard, please make sure you subscribe to the podcast, share it with your pals. And if you like it, give us a 5-star rating. Thank you very much. I'll speak to you next time. Goodbye for now.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.